Well, I think we have a lot to talk about this morning. These lessons are quite dense. I want to talk about first this selection from Proverbs, then I want to talk some about the Psalm, and then about the Gospel. I'm sorry sort of to have been ignoring James during a fair amount of this this period that we're reading it. I commend James to you, but it just seems like other things displace it. So, first of all, this passage we get from Proverbs about how wisdom is crying out in the streets to a people that are more or less oblivious. They're not paying attention, their minds are elsewhere, they're doing other things. And then you get this personification of wisdom, which says, well, when you begin to reap what you have sown, and you are beginning to feel the consequences of your oblivion, then I will mock you. You will seek me, and you won't find me. And I think this is probably going a little far for wisdom. There may be some other ways of looking at it. But what I hope we do is we hear in this passage from Proverbs a commentary on society. And what it's really asking is, as a people, and of course I would ask this of ourselves, as a people, do we generally, in our public life, are we asking the significant questions? Are we paying attention to the important things? Or, as it occurred to me as I was wasting my life the other night watching professional football on television, it occurred to me as I watched one after another of ostensible human beings being portrayed as those who have never had a serious thought in their life. Indeed, a question has never crossed their mind, and that this is the way we portray ourselves to ourselves, as spiritually vacant, dead, oblivious, sleepy beings who have no serious concerns in the world, and that all cultural energy is just diverted into entertainments and trivialities, and we're not paying attention. I mean, this is what flooded me as I was watching professional football. Wow, is this really where our cultural attention needs to be given? And you know, obviously it's not. Obviously we are, as a culture, distracted by lots of things, but you know, here we are reading a passage that's at least 3,000 years old, so we understand that that kind of cultural dynamic has been in place for a long time. A couple of things. You know, what it's really trying to illustrate or describe is the biblical dynamic that the worst God can do to us is let us go our own way. That we will just sort of make a world for ourselves in obliviousness to what is maybe perhaps more important. And then we will live, we will reap the fruit of that, as Proverbs says. What I would like to remind us of, it's a quote I haven't used for a long time, and it's an Augustinian quote, and mostly I've been referring to him in a negative sense, but this is, I think, from the early Augustine. I've said this many times here, but it's a great quote. It says, what happens when you don't do what is right, you lose the power to know what is right. When you don't do what is right, when you know what is right, you lose the power to know what is right. And that's the dynamic of Proverbs. That a culture that persistently gives its attention and its energy and its resources to things that aren't important will find itself living a meaningless and trivial cultural life. And then the other thing that, two more things about this. One, we're not saying the confession from Isaiah 58 today, and only because we were just getting too many bulletin inserts, you know, he didn't want a little booklet. But we're not saying the confession from Isaiah 58 today, but really what it says is precisely the reversal of this dynamic in Proverbs. Start doing the right thing. Instead of lying to each other, tell the truth. Stop stealing. do what you know to be right. It hasn't gone away entirely. Do what you know to be right, and things will start to get better. And then finally, this personification of wisdom as mocking those who are bereft of its presence. What I would offer as an alternative to that vision is Jesus' lament over Jerusalem. Oh, how often I have longed to gather you under my wings as a mother hen does her chicks, but you would not let me. Think of that as wisdom speaking to people who think they have more important things to think about. And think of Jesus looking down on the city that was about to kill him, and looking down and seeing people lost, frightened, and afraid, and saying, oh, how often I have longed to gather you under my wings as a mother hen does her chicks, but you would not. This, I would suggest, is closer to the God known by Jesus than this mocking personification of wisdom that says, ah, when you're in trouble, don't come to me. It's a little more compassionate than that, and touched by a deeper sense of that prophetic grief. So that's Proverbs. The psalm, I want to just lean on the first line. The heavens declare the glory of God. This psalm is, in a sense, a hymn to the presence of God known in creation, and then as it talks about the law of God, the awe, which I would suggest is a replacement for the word fear, the awe of God, as it appears in human beings. But the thing that I want to sort of lean on in this, when we talk about the presence of God being known in creation, which I've been pretty persistently leaning on for years now, one of the shifts that I think it really suggests, and this is a shift, and it may not happen in my lifetime, but I think it's happening, and it has to do with a shift in where we seek God's sacred presence. And as I've been saying, you know, for centuries, if not millennia, the church has been saying, if you want to find the sacred, you come to church, and this is where the sacred is. And it's the sacred is made known and communicated in things such as teachings and sacraments. And those don't go away, but they are set within a different context. And the context is going to be the sacredness of creation itself. And so we don't so much that the activity of us as the holy community of God is not so much to sort of close our doors and do our little sacred things here within closed doors, but rather we gather to remember that we live within a sacred reality. That if we have the eyes and the heart to see, all things are sustained by God's presence. It's not, as the collect said, it's not that without you we cannot please you, O God. It is, without you we cannot exist. We don't exist without God, and nothing else does either. And so we gather here to remember that, and to remind ourselves as a people that our task is to go out beyond these doors and help the world remember that we live in a sacred reality, and then to act appropriately. It's really different if you see the world around us as just, you know, natural resources there for the taking. But if it's a sacred community of beings and life, oh, don't we act differently in response to that? And that's the shift I think is coming. We're not going to be so much the repository of the sacred as we're going to be the people that recognize the sacred everywhere. We're going to go out and we're going to see the activity of God, and we're going to name it and help people see it and help our lives be more and more formed in relationship to that sacred presence. So that's one line of the psalm, and now we're going to move to the gospel. And this gospel keeps coming up. We get to it maybe three or four times a year. Who do other people say that I am? Who do you say that I am? Which is, of course, one of the primary questions in the Christian life. Who do you say Jesus is? Because how you live as a Christian will be in many ways determined by that response. So better to get conscious of it than just kind of float along on unexamined assumptions. So you get this encounter between Jesus and his disciples, and Jesus says, well, who do you say that I am? And Peter says, well, you're the Messiah. And then what does Jesus say immediately? Don't say anything about it. And why not? Why not? Well, I think this is one of those moments, and Peter actually bears this out in the next paragraph. Peter didn't know what he was talking about. He said, you're the Messiah, but he didn't really understand what the Messiah was to be. And I would suggest that as James said, not everybody should be a teacher, and yet here I am standing in front of us, so I realize the vulnerability of my own words. But I would suggest that people talk a lot about religion, and I would say almost all of it is worthless. People don't know what they're talking about. And the central dynamic in people not understanding what they're talking about in religion has to do with the third commandment. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. And that does not mean swearing. It means using God as a tool to get what you want. That is what it means to take the name of God in vain. And religion, it is its besetting sin. It always becomes a tool for people to get what they want. And that has nothing to do with either God or real religion. And that's what Jesus said to Peter. He said, you're thinking of it in purely a human way, which is to say an egocentric way. You're thinking about your own needs, your own safety. You're not thinking about what God is doing and what God wants you to do and how God wants you to be. You're thinking about it in a self-centered way. And as we hear every Ash Wednesday, what does Jesus say can be done egocentrically? You can pray egocentrically. They've got their reward. You can give alms egocentrically. They've got their reward. You can fast egocentrically. Everything we do can be done for selfish reasons or out of a spirit of generosity and compassion. No act is inherently sacred. No act will protect us from being egocentric. Even saying, Jesus, you're the Messiah. Peter was saying it in an egocentric way, and he didn't understand. And Jesus said, please, don't tell. What he's really saying is, don't spread misconceptions about me. Because those misconceptions are all over. People think of the Messiah as a political figure, as a military figure, as someone to restore Israel's prominence. That's not what I'm about. Don't go telling people that I'm the Messiah. So maybe that's a place for us to pause. What do we really think the significance of Jesus as the Christ really is? The one anointed by the Spirit of God, so that we say in him we see the presence and fullness of God. What does that really mean? How are we supposed to respond to that with the warning that we often respond out of a very egocentric way? The gospel moves on to yet another of these passages that we could talk about for years. If you would save your life, you will lose it. And again, as I say every the times when it comes up, Jesus is not talking about biological life. He's not saying, you know, somebody is trying to kill you because you're a Christian. You're not going to get thrown to the lions. That's not the word that's in the Greek. The Greek is psyche. If you would save your psyche, you will lose it. Our inner life, and you could probably translate it more clearly as soul. If you would save your soul, you will lose it. read something to you from Annie Dillard. Anybody know Annie Dillard? Yeah. And it's a book of hers called The Writing Life. But it pertains to what it might mean. This is just any one of any number of ways that we might think about what it means to save our life versus lose it. And this is Annie Dillard talking in terms of writing. One of the things I know about writing is this. Spend it all. Shoot it. Play it. Lose it all. Right away. Every time. Do not hoard what seems good for a later place in the book or for another book. Give it. Give it all. Give it now. The impulse to save something good for a better place later is the signal to spend it now. Something more will arise for later, something better. And that's the issue of trust. Is there more to come, or do we live in this pinched, pinched place where nothing more will come? Something better. These things fill from behind, from beneath, like well water. Similarly, the impulse to keep to yourself what you have learned is not only shameful, it is destructive. Anything you do not give freely and abundantly becomes lost to you. You open your safe and find ashes. So, that passage from Annie Dillard obviously applies also to our lives. What are you holding back today? Or are you going to give everything you have to this day, which is the day we have been given? This is it. This is the day we have been given. And so the emphasis is hugely on living in the present moment and giving everything to that present moment and holding nothing back. Sell everything you have for the sake of the present moment. And as to if you save your life, you will lose it, I'll put before us two choices. Either we are safe here or we're not. Either we are if there is no God, and if God does not care for us, or if this is, as so many people say, just a kind of mechanical accident, all of creation, who knows where it came from and who knows where it's going, but it is cold and mute and impersonal, and when we die, it's just over. Well, that's it. There's nothing. There is no holding on. Try to hold on to anything, and you will understand instantly the futility of it. We can't hold on to anything, including ourselves. Or we are, as Jesus said, safe beyond our wildest imagining, that we are held, that God is not just with us all the time, but God is in fact inescapable. And God cares nothing for the barrier that we describe as death. That doesn't seem to make any difference to God. Our being is not lost to God, even through the changes that we undergo in this human life. If we're not held, we can't hang on. And if we are held, there's nothing we can do to make it, to secure ourselves more deeply, except to trust and to listen to what Jesus said over and over. Maybe the single most repeated teaching in the life of Jesus: if you understand your real situation, if you know who you are in relation to God, don't be afraid. You won't be afraid. And that's what is underlying all of the teaching of Jesus about saving your life. You try to save it because you're afraid. And by being afraid, you give witness that you don't really understand who we are and where we are. Let go. Spend it all today, because you are held infinitely in the life and the love of God.